Hello? Can you hear me?
Just waiting for the meeting to start.
Okay. Just in case anyone is talking, I cannot hear anyone.
Nobody's speaking right now. Probably that's why. I don't know.
Thank you so much. Yes, that's reassuring to know that I have no issue with the audio.
Okay.
Thank you.
Welcome, everyone. I think I was muted. All right. So welcome, everyone, to the weekly VC Edge call. These calls are recorded. Anyone can participate in the calls. You do not need a W3C account. However, to make any substantive contributions to any of the specifications, you do have to be a member of the CCG and sign IPR agreement. So if you haven't done that and you want to contribute, please let us know. Reach out to myself or to Ildiko or to Simone, and we'll set you up. The call notes are recorded, transcribed, auto-transcribed, and the archives are available at the CCG GitHub repo. We use a queuing system, so click on the raise your hand icon in the Jitsi UI, or type Q plus in the chat, and it should queue you up. Okay, let's do introductions and reintroductions. Is anyone new here and would like to introduce themselves? Go ahead and type Q plus or raise your hand. Or if anybody hasn't introduced themselves in a while, go ahead, Juan.
Yes, good afternoon. Juan Carballo here from KAUST. I'm being part of also the NEOM team that is working on exploring the utilization of wallets within the educational sector. I work as an experience designer and architecture manager within the KAUST University in Saudi Arabia.
Well, fantastic. Welcome. We're glad to have you here. Do you mind pasting in chat a URL to the university or to your project? Anyone else want to introduce or reintroduce themselves if you haven't spoken up in a while? Thank you. Thank you, Juan. I see the URL. All right. Let's do announcements and reminders. Does anybody have community events that they want to remind people of? I know we have IIW coming up in the fall, closer to Halloween. I know we've got Badge Summit in Boulder, Colorado, coming up later in July. Any other relevant conferences that I'm forgetting? Okay. So in that case, let's move on to our. Ildiko mentions that there's a European conference in chat, online Educa Berlin. Sounds really interesting. I wish I was there. Any other announcements while people are connecting? All right. So the main topic of this week's call is just free form. It's office hours and open agenda, which means feel free to ask questions, share how your projects have been going, what you've been encountering, if there's any roadblocks you've been running into, or what's on your mind in general in the area of educational credentials, technology, and so on. Or report outs from any interesting conferences you've been to. I can start on our end. So I wear several different hats aside from co-chair of this excellent task force here. So I work mostly with MIT's Digital Credentials Consortium, where I'm technical architect for an open source mobile wallet, a issuer suite, so UI and backend services, and a verifier suite. In addition, I also help out the Arizona State University team on very similar kind of things. So I work on their corner pocket mobile wallet, mobile credential wallet, their issuer services, their verifiers, and so on. And I also help out Phil Long with various projects for Chamber of Commerce, for T3, and so on. So with MIT and ASU, we're continuing work on just adding features to the wallet. And so we've got a open source mobile wallet written in JavaScript in React Native. And we're preparing it to hand off stewardship to the Open Wallet Foundation, which, if you're not familiar with, is part of the Linux Foundation. It's a Linux Foundation project. And its goal is not to write specifications. It leaves that to the other spec bodies like ITF and W3C and ISO and so on. But its mandate is to steward and curate a set of open source libraries and wallet implementations. It's working on a sort of best practices and architecture and security sort of paper for wallets. But in general, it's much like many other Linux Foundation projects, like the Apache Foundation and so on. Its goal is to, sort of gather and steward, open source, either full on wallet implementations or component libraries. So we've been talking to the Open Wallet Foundation and are in the process of migrating the Learner Credential Wallet, which is what the DCC Wallet project is called, over to Open Wallet Foundation. MIT will continue sort of leading the software development as we can. We're a fairly small development team. But by moving it to the Linux Foundation, we're inviting broader participation. Hopefully the project will be interesting to other teams as well. So if anybody has questions about the Open Wallet Foundation, please feel free to ask in chat or queue up. I'm probably not the best person to answer them, but we can forward them to the Open Wallet Foundation folks and get your questions answered. And the stuff that we've been working on is, so basically cleaning house for patching up various like warnings and errors and tech debt in order to invite guests over for Learner Credential Wallet. That's handing off the open source wallet to the broader community. And aside from that, I've been working on deploying issuer suites to consortium member universities. And we've kicked off the quote-unquote trust registries project. I say quote-unquote because trust registries is kind of a controversial and not the best name in our credential community for the thing that we're studying. And what do we mean by trust registries? Also, anybody dealing with credentials in the education space, but really in any space, this absolutely covers any sort of credentials or anytime you sign an object digitally. Because what's a signature, right? You're signing it essentially with a cryptographic key or with another opaque identifier like a DID, a decentralized identifier. And which brings all sorts of useful properties. But the major challenge with digital signature is that the identifier is opaque. When you're receiving a credential, you don't know who the key belonged to that you signed it with. And so you must necessarily have access to directories, to lists of known issuers. So you can say, okay, this key belongs to this university, or this key belongs to this particular company, or even an individual person, right? We're in the area of education. We're interested in self-issued credentials, which presents its own set of interesting challenges in terms of if we can get issuers, companies and organizations on a list, what about natural persons? So we can talk about that, what some of the techniques there are available. But anyway, so regardless of what you do with credentials, regardless of what technology stack or what sort of specifications you're using, you're going to need to have access to these directories, to these lists of known issuers. And that's what we mean by trust registry. At baseline, it is a list mapping opaque identifiers to known entities. Of course, that's not all that it can be. These registries can have other advanced features, such as they can carry information about what kind of verification steps were taken, right, to get the entity on that list. Meaning we performed full personal KYC, the know your customer terminology from financial world. We can say that, okay, this is our governance framework, and in order to get it on this list, you have to meet these criteria, and these are the verification steps we're going to take. All of these things to raise the confidence level of the verifier when they're hopefully will be accepting your credentials in the future. So aside from a base level, this is a list of identifiers, these registries have lots of other useful features to the ecosystem. And so Credential Engine and Digital Credentials Consortium and many other groups have joined into this one-year research project or practical research project, where essentially we're comparing the half a dozen to a dozen existing or in-progress specifications. Because all of these groups working with credentials registries have run into this problem. We need registries. That means we need a data model. And sometimes we need a protocol or an API with which to interface them with. And that leaves implementers like us with lots of questions. Okay, I'm entering into this world. I have a wallet, or I have a verifier, or I have an issuer. Which one of these trust registry specifications do we use? And there's already a handful of choices. So one of the goals of this research project is we'll be simply comparing the specifications and trying to make sense of them. These are the trade-offs that they're making. This is a data model specification. This is just an API. These are the affordances they have for how to specify governance, how terms of service, how to get on that list and how to get off that list, and how to, all the information is outdated. How do I simply change the information, right? All of these things need to be thought through. So the Trust Registry Project will be comparing the specifications, selecting one or two, and standing up an implementation, a sample registry that we can operate for a while, use in our wallets and issuers, so that we can report knowledgeably that, okay, so this is what it's like to operate one of these. These are the downsides. These are the caveats. So as a sort of service to the community. So that's one of the projects. But, does anybody else have, questions, items of discussion, things that they're working on they want to share? Hop on the list. Naomi, please go ahead.
Hi there. Hi, Dimitri. You said some interesting things, and we'd love to stay in touch with you, not only about the trust registries. I think that that was one thing Velocity had been inquiring around earlier in terms of certain lists that we've seen that we were curious about how we could incorporate them into the network. So that's definitely, and of course, we have our own tools, so we'd definitely love to stay in touch with you on that. Another thing that you mentioned of interest was the wallet, the open wallet, and working with the Linux Foundation. I'd love to follow up with you on that as well. Velocity had a couple components of its organization that we were interested in connecting with Linux, and maybe there is some dovetailing of interest in terms of your work with the wallet and Linux Foundation. So would love to follow up with you on those two points. But in addition, you know, you started this opening up, you know, any announcements, recent events, and our CTO Andres did recently present at one of the DIFF events specifically on empowering self-sovereign identity with trust credentials. I did post it on LinkedIn. It kicked off on Thursday. But what I'll do is I'll put in the chat at least some of his recent writings, and, you know, everyone on this call may have ideas or thoughts or feedback on that. So I'll put some of his recent writings and blogs in the chat for anyone who kind of wants to read Velocity's latest opinion. And then the other thing I'll put in the chat again is our LER infrastructure requirements. And this was kind of an early doc, and it was retrofitted, I think, for the LER term being used in the US. I think otherwise, it's almost like a manifesto of some of Velocity's core beliefs in terms of why it works the way it works. I just think that as we're turning this corner and we're starting to invest in various products that educate us on the notion of trust, it might be a helpful document for everyone to have and opine on. So I just stuck those two in the chat, and we have a lot going on in Velocity Network Foundation as well. If anyone's interested in hearing more specific updates, I believe we'll be publishing like a quarterly or a 6-month kind of outward facing newsletter on some of the big changes in Velocity in the next week or so that hopefully everyone will take a look at and be able to keep up on things happening in Velocity Network with all our members. So thanks.
Thank you so much, Naomi. I really appreciate it. Anyone else? All right. Well, so while people are searching their minds and hopefully getting in the queue, I want to introduce a topic that's always near and dear to my heart, which is self-issued credentials. I think we've talked a bit about, we've presented on this topic, I think, with Phil Long on the subject, on the work that we're doing with Link Credentials author and in the future on an open source resume author demo. But the reason I bring these up is that we've essentially got these two worlds, these two aspects of our credentials. We have the classical institutionally issued credentials. Which, what does that mean? It means that it's an organization or a company doing it, and they're likely to be on a known issuer list somewhere. Whether it's by the government, by the local chamber of commerce, by some sort of third party directory, something like that, right? But then we have this whole other world of natural persons who are not likely to be on the list. And in some jurisdictions, like the European Union, are specifically not legally allowed to be kept on lists for privacy and you know, very, very good legal reasons. we still want people to be able to self-issue credentials. And for various reasons, right? So the first time the subject is brought up to people unfamiliar with the verifiable credentials, the question immediately comes up, why, right? What business value, what usefulness do we have in a person issuing a claim of some sort? And the answer to that is always, well, just like in the current non-digital credentials world, right? The business value of it greatly depends on the person, greatly depends on their qualifications, capabilities, reputation in the community, and so on. Ah, I see we've got Mahesh on the queue, so I'll pause here. Mahesh, go ahead. If you're talking, you might be muted. You're showing as unmuted here, though. But we can't hear you otherwise. Or at least I can't hear you. It could be a network partition. If somebody else can hear Mahesh, let us know in chat. Okay, so Mahesh is going to reconnect. All right. So, yeah, so self-issued credentials. The value of a self-issued credential greatly depends. And one of the things that we're claiming in starting this project with Phil Long and others of making more widely available tools for natural persons to easily create verifiable credentials. One of the things that we're claiming and are investigating as part of this project is our thesis is that the value of self-issued credentials can be greatly increased with two things. One is evidence, right? Let's say this is a self-issued claim of skills or an employment history item, right? The things that potentially make up a resume. The veracity and the value of that can be greatly increased with just adding to the credential a link to a video where you're demonstrating that skill, a link to an external non-digitally assigned certification, a blog post, a code repository, right? Literally evidence of the claim that you're making. And then the second thing that we think greatly increases the value of the claim is, of course, recommendations, endorsements, comments on the claim by other people. And in the verifiable credential world, we have these general purpose mechanisms that we're hoping to see wider use. So one of the things that we're trying to demonstrate is the user interface and the data model on one approach and how this can be done. But I see Mahesh has rejoined us. So go ahead, Mahesh.
Can you
yes,
hear me?
We can hear you. Go ahead. Yeah.
All right. Sorry. I missed there was probably a presentation on ASU Pocket and the TLN network maybe 2 weeks back. I was wondering if it's possible for you or somebody else who was there to give a quick summary of where the progress is. I'm very interested in that particular project. It's right in my backyard. Thank you.
Thank you, Mahesh. Who wants to give a summary of the ASU presentation? We should have a recording up in the minutes. Ah, okay. So Zildiko mentioned, so the ASU Pocket presentation was scheduled for previously, but had to be moved due to speaker requests. So that's coming up. So okay. You haven't missed anything yet.
All right. Great. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Any other questions? Any questions about the notion of self-issued credentials on, have any of you either implemented a wallet or have used a wallet that has included tools to create self-issued credentials? Yildiko, go ahead.
Yes, I was also leaving some comments in the chat because normally the transcriber doesn't like my voice. So just to have something on record. We are unfortunately in a bit of a pickle in Europe because, like you also noted, in Europe, it's important that all the credentials that are legally issued, the European Digital Credentials for Learning, are sealed by the issuing organization's electronic seal. However, we do recognize the importance of credentials that could have some kind of like lower signature expectations. So we're analyzing that because, like I said in the chat as well, for especially non-formal learners who may not be able to expect non-formal learning providers or for like legacy credentials to be issued, it's very important to convert these into structured data so that they are machine readable and can be interpreted when a person is applying for jobs, because the ELM that is applied for these credentials are multilingual and already utilize skill taxonomies and competence frameworks. So the value of the structured data can be incredibly high in the future. So definitely a plus one from me.
Thanks, Ildiko. And yeah, it's a tough technological problem. How do you electronically sign? How do you seal these self-issued credentials? Again, not that it's difficult to sign. To create a signature, it's one function call, right? The signing part is trivial technologically. What's not trivial, what I suspect Ildiko is referring to, and what one of the things that we're investigating with Phil Long is, once it's signed, how do you get the key or the identifier in a directory somewhere? How do you hook into the known issuer mechanism? How do you identify the person? And again, in the case of classic universities, companies, other providers, yeah. So as Ildiko mentions in chat, in the European Union model, credentials must be signed by an EIDAS compliant electronic seal, which means, what does that mean? It means that the issuer has to be on a registry, on a list. The issuer has had to have gone through a organizational identity verification. So again, and since those identity verifications are for organizations and cannot be sort of by legislation with natural persons, what do we do about people? So let's talk about what the options are, and then some guesses on what some of the solutions could be, right? So the trivial option is, of course, yeah, so as Ildiko mentions in chat, how can third-party viewers trust the contents of the credentials if they are self-claimed, if their claims about the issuers themselves? So, yeah, that's the key question. How do we get the signature on a directory somewhere, or at least how do we identify who the signer was? And then how does the verifier trust the claims? And there's a couple of options. In terms of increasing trust, one is, again, evidence. You don't, just like in the non-credential world, you don't take people's word just at face value. You also ask to provide evidence. Evidence of the skill, evidence of the project completion, of the output. And, in addition, we have these well-known mechanisms of letters of recommendation, letters of endorsement. We have the references available upon request at the end of a resume, which realistically means that somebody in HR is going to call up your previous manager, previous teammate, and just try to confirm what you claimed. Again, the reason that self-issued claims are valuable is real easy to demonstrate. A resume is nothing but a collection of self-issued claims. our resume is valuable. Absolutely. That is how so much of our employment world rests on. So what we're sort of competing against, what we're racing against is, can we provide in these digital signatures, in these digital credentials, can we provide equivalent or hopefully more value than a regular paper resume? Go ahead, Ildiko, you're in the queue.
Yeah, thank you. So yeah, I think we do agree that the trust issue is the more complicated one. But what I also wrote before is that the sheer advantage of the structured data already makes the self-claim more valuable than just the CV and the recommendation letter. So that's something that I like saying, that if it's better than what we have traditionally on paper or regular CVs, it's already better. So try not to pick the faults too much. But yeah, I think the next move is how to solve the issue of the trust where the claim is self-made.
Yeah, excellent point. Thank you for bringing that up. Let's talk about that. So as a brief side note about is it better than a paper resume, one of my favorite essays from I think early 2000s was one by Joel Spolsky, who is incidentally the founder of the company that created Stack Overflow, as well as Trello and a couple other things. Great guy, wrote a lot about issue tracking and managing developers. One of the things he always said is, in developing an issue tracker, you're not just competing against Jira or Microsoft or other people that are providing the software. You're competing against an open Notepad file. You're competing against just a simple file in a text editor. I always think about that in the area of credentials, especially when employment and resumes. I always think, just like when creating a software, are you better than an open text file in terms of jotting down notes? Here, again, the question is, can we be better than a paper resume? And as Ildiko points out, one of the low-hanging fruit, one of the sort of holy grails of this whole field is not just the digital signature. The value of verifiable credentials, whether institutionally issued or self-issued, is not just the signature. It's not just the reputation that the issuer brings to the table. It's the fact that it is structured data. What do we mean by that? So if you look at the world of data as a developer, there's essentially only two kinds of data. There's raw text or unstructured text. This is what you get when, I don't know, you write an email or you scan in an ebook or you scan in a resume, right? You're applying to a job portal and it's like, upload your resume in Word or PDF format. There. That's unstructured data. It's long paragraphs of text meant to be for human consumption, but what does an analytical system, what does machine-readable code, what can code do with that? And of course, now these days, we have large language models. We have AIs with all of their benefits and drawbacks. And part of the reason why there is such hype about AIs is that they let us turn unstructured text, freeform text, text from a scanned in resume, into, hopefully, and this is still being demonstrated in a number of experiments, the hope is that we can turn that unstructured text into structured data. What do we mean by that? We mean machine readable records. We mean fields that are defined. We're all familiar with these records. These are anytime you fill out a form or use a spreadsheet, although a form is a slightly better example than a spreadsheet, right? This is where columns and fields are defined, the data structure is known, and the receiver knows what to do with it. It knows that this field is a name, this field is the name of the place that you worked, and this field is how long you worked there, that sort of thing. And in general, one of the main value propositions of verifiable credentials is somebody somewhere, usually the issuer or the implementer of the software that was used to create this thing, did the cognitive work and the user interface, the hard UX work of turning this record into something that is just meant for humanable into structured data, which means that it's actionable, hopefully, if you have the right system. It's actionable. Now, let's see. There are some good comments in chat. Tico says, very true. We won't see many self-claimed degrees. Much learning is happening non-formally. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Phil is pointing out that in terms of personal identity, this is the issue that we were talking about earlier. How do we know who the credential is from? One of the very powerful tools in this toolkit is the notaries infrastructure, right? Like, we're all hopefully familiar with Notary Public, which is, if you think about it, an interface between the formal world of government and bureaucracy and the messy human unstructured world in legal terms. It's much like LLM is a mechanism to turn unstructured text into hopefully structured. In a way, notaries are a mechanism into turning, or at least partially, self-issued claims into witnessed and verified claims, into giving them a set of structure and formality. Now, let's see. There's also an excellent comment from Nate that I think I may have missed as the transcriber was scrolling the document. Ah, Nate was talking about Project Orca, enabling self-claiming of credentials within the governance rule of a community. Haven't seen any wallets. Ah, scrolled off. Nate, please feel free to hop on the queue. We'd love to hear about your project. And it's a really good point that it's not a binary on-off between traditional institutions and people. We have many other nodes in the middle, such as a given community, whether it's a club, an association, and so on. I'm sure you can explain it better, but that's an excellent point.
So Orca is an open source piece of software that aims to be a badge platform for communities of practice, whatever that community of practice is. It could be a sports team who primarily wants to have people show up to the pickup practices, or it could be a department of a university, you know, engaging in formal education, and they can set up their achievements with whatever governance rule they like in terms of what it takes to earn them. And self-claiming is available. So it's interesting to see the presence of many possible communities, whether they're these tiny little things that mayflies that spin up for a very small purpose, or storied institutions that last for hundreds of years as intermediaries in this space that exists for the purpose of enabling people to self-claim the skills that they have and then get peer validation and endorsement from the other people in the community. It's one possible approach here. I think it's also compatible with sort of pure self-claiming, where maybe you have some key material in a wallet somewhere and you're creating credentials signed by and to the same credential subject. I haven't seen a whole lot of that happening yet, although I'm sure that we will, as there are destinations for the machine-readable files to actually go and be turned back into real insights and real actionable, you know, intelligence, like you said.
Thank you so much, Nate. Yeah, these are really excellent points from Ildiko and Nate. Ildiko's point that in addition to the difficulty of identity verification, don't forget about the value proposition of structured data. Even if self-issued. And then Nate bringing up several excellent points, such as, one, there's communities and groups and all sorts of other issuers that could be potentially high business value, both reputationally and organizationally. So that's an excellent point. And then, as Nate mentioned, we still shouldn't forget about individual people, right? We've got these wallets. And what do wallets do? They manage cryptographic keys, which means we have much of the infrastructure for people to manage their own keys. But that last mile, the difficulties, of course, how do we identify them? How do we get them on a registry that maps a key to a person? One of the possible solutions was already mentioned by Phil Long, and that is notaries, right? You can use notaries as an active, as a trust anchor, where notaries can issue a notarization credential that says, okay, I checked this person's ID and this key, it allegedly belongs to Dmitry Zagadulin, right? So that's one option. And then, the other option that I, so that is my personal suspicion that may play a role is, of course, address books. Meaning, we all carry in all of our phones essentially a trust registry, right? That we use to filter incoming phone calls. That we, this person calling, okay, it's grandma, it's my car dealership, whatever, right? Their opaque identifier, the phone number, is in my registry, which is the address book. Right, but the nice thing about even today's phone address books is that they have a bunch of fields, emails, address, phone number, and they all have, we don't really use them. It's not really used much, but the capability is there. They all have fields to record identifiers and keys. And so I definitely want to see more done with that. But we've got a more interesting conversation in chat. Naomi mentioned level of effort. Right, level of effort required for self-reported or peer-tested credentials. An excellent point. Phil mentions that those of us interested in self-issued credentials are trying to align existing formal organizational practices. And then Eldico. How would this look, Eldigo? How would this look like in a digitally signed credential, the self-signed credential plus the notary? Excellent question, and we hope Phil and I hope to present on that in the future. And I see Phil on the queue. Go ahead, Phil.
Yeah, this is a very helpful conversation, actually, for those of us like Nate and ourselves and others that are looking at how we try to transpose what institutions and corporate. In nonprofit or corporate mechanisms of either professional development or educational acquisition of knowledge and skills have been doing for centuries, frankly, into a world which is more unstructured and less opaque, or less transparent, I should say. And one of the things I think that we're continuing to harp on that is trying to bridge this gap, Dmitry already mentioned, and that is the presence of third-party evidence and assessments that an individual can offer in support of the claim that they're self-asserting, so that there is the opportunity for those third-party entities, whether they are a testing center or another individual with reputational value, or other sorts of alignments that are more associated with formally structured issued credentials from an entity and organization that has, at least in the higher education sense, the notions of accreditation that sort of check on the practices that are being used by which the acquisition is taking place to see if they conform to things that are well known to increase the probability that the acquisition claimed is actually one that the person is capable of demonstrating in another context. So I think that's where the issues are. And any of us that are interested in this, the more sharing we do about possible connections in this regard will help all of us. And the last one that Dmitry mentioned was the context of your address book. And in effect, we've been talking about the idea of a personal recommendation graphs that one might be able to develop that are associated with particular dimensions of one's types of skills that one is claiming, so that there is the start of at least of a collection that facilitates another independent third party's opportunity to judge that self-claim with a set of things that is more than just a random individual picked. So thanks.
Thanks, Phil. Nate brings up another excellent question in chat. How quickly could a verifier consume all of these forms of evidence? Meaning the promise of digital credentials is a sort of instantaneous verification process, except it's not, right? So this is one of the fundamental insights we're all starting to have as a community in implementing these credentials is that we don't want to oversell it as an instant verification. Human judgment still has to get involved. Even if it is upfront human judgment on which trust registries do we pick so that if a signature from that entity shows up, then we know we can trust it. But in so many cases, and as Nate points out, especially in self-issued credentials and evidence, we're still going to need human judgment, which is incidentally why it's super important to make sure that your issuing and verifier protocols are deeply asynchronous, that there can be minutes and hours and days and weeks between a submission for a verification and a response back, right? We need to make sure to build into our protocols this essentially humans being involved. Okay, so we've got almost nearing time. And we want to encourage everyone at the end of the call to reach out to us if you have a topic you want to speak on, right? So we're, as always, we're looking for presenters and speakers on these weekly calls. So if you have a project you want to showcase, a topic you want to present on, please email Ildiko, email myself, email Simone. We'll drop some emails in the chat here's mine, and Ildiko can share hers and so on. Please reach out to us. Okay, but in the 10 minutes or so that's left, I want to make sure we highlight the two things. One is, well, I want to talk about, again, the value and the difficulty of structured versus unstructured data. And Phil in chat points out, it might be useful to dig deeper into what attributes people associate with a well-regarded brand that are used as proxy supporting trust in the assertions claimed. Yes, absolutely. I think that investigation is crucial to the whole field of verifiable credentials. Oh, yeah, and the other thing that I wanted to briefly address is, just to answer Ildiko's question, what does a notary or an endorser look like? Does a notary just add a signature to the existing credential or what? And yes, so adding a signature is always a solution, but it's never the best solution. Fortunately, verifiable credentials have other mechanisms that are sort of the equivalent of the attached. Again, I always find it helpful to think about real-world processes on and then mimic them in credential skeuomorphism, so to speak. Right? Think about what the procedure for a notary is. I have a document. I don't know, self-attestation about something, and then I attach. I include another separate document from the notary that says, I reviewed this and my notary number is this and here's my sign. I've reviewed the attached, right? So even in the real world, we have this notion of attachments and hyperlinks. We say things like the above, the attached document, and so on. And so similar techniques can be used in the credential world by the notion of links, whether cryptographically secured or not, attachments, embedding, and so on. But that sounds like a great topic in general for another presentation. But super quick, it turns out that producing, that turning unstructured text, even if it is text in somebody's mind, into structured machine actionable is actually really hard. What do I mean by that? Think about developing a free form tool to issue self-issued verifiable credentials, which is exactly what we're working on with Phil, the link claims author and the resume author. Think about if you're managing a development team or you're a developer and you're sitting down and your task is come up with general purpose tool, or somebody can come and produce any kind of credential, or but not just any kind of credential. Let's narrow it down. Let's say it's a skill assertion. This tool is going to produce skill assertions. The trivial sort of solution is, okay, you have a form, and it's like your name of the skill, the description of the skill. What steps did you have to take to get it? Do you have any sort of supporting evidence, right? So that's sort of the baseline. You have these couple of fields, but they're mostly unstructured because most of the value is still in the human readable text inside name of the skill, and description of the skill. Why is name of the skill unstructured? Because people can refer to the same skill in different languages, right? Our dream as developers, as bureaucrats, as stewards of the ecosystem is always, wouldn't it be great to link this skill to an existing skill, framework? Like, say the government has, okay, this is a directory of skills that we recognize. Nate, our dream is bureaucrats as the name of a new album. It would be an excellent album. So that's one of the avenues for us to investigate. Can we tie these skills or any sort of self-assertions into published frameworks? And the answer is, well, trivially, yes, but how to do it with the least friction and the least confusion on part of the user is an interesting topic that is worth a lot of investigation. All right, but we are nearing time. Yeah, excellent points in chat, Ildiko. Reference skills from published framework, associate volume to the learning, show proof of skill acquisition, including detailed description of the type mode of assessment. Yeah. Anyway, so my whole point was that the main value proposition, it also turns out to be one of the hardest things to do in this field, which is how do you make the text machine actionable and structured? Hopefully you're tying it into frameworks, but there's not that many good frameworks, so we're all sort of on the lookout of frameworks to use, and then how to present that workflow to the user. Do we present a giant drop-down list that says, okay, here's the 500 skills recognized by the state of Minnesota, select one, right? Do we do that, or can we do something better? All right, any other last-minute questions? Phil talks about the role of third-party testing centers may merge as comparable value to institutional issuers. Yeah, great question. Phil, do you have anything else to say? I think you're on the queue.
No, not specifically. I think what we're all struggling with is the ability to make this connection and do so in a way that doesn't impose on the individual who is making the self-issued claim the expectation of the knowledge and expertise that assessment organizations and others that have been doing this for such a long period of time have developed in fits and starts over tens of years. We have to figure out a way that there's something that's good enough to convey the brand value recognition that a lot of people currently use who aren't even paying attention to all the things underneath the surface, but just assuming them.
Thanks, Phil. All right. We are nearing the top of the hour, so we should wrap up. I think the moral of the story here is that next time somebody wakes you up at 4 a.m. in the morning and says, quick, what's the value proposition and what are the difficult things of self-issued credentials? Then you'll be able to answer them. You can say, what are the hard parts? Turning unstructured thoughts into structured ones, establishing trust in the self-issuer, presenting evidence and presenting endorsements, and pulling all of that together in a user-friendly way. And if you can say all that at 4 a.m, we salute you. And see you all hopefully the next week, or see you all one of these next weeks. Thank you again, everyone. As always, we really appreciate the good conversation and questions. And talk to y'all later. And reach out to us if you have topics to present on.